Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the Judges with the First King. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. Having finished the book of Judges, we have been following out the phenomenon of the Judges through into the book of 1 Samuel. And we've seen that Samuel was the last and in some ways the greatest of the judges. However, the people, when they were afraid of the Ammonites, rejected him as judge and demanded a human king to be set over them, when God was already their king. Then we saw that a tall and handsome man named Saul came to Samuel seeking information about some missing donkeys, and the old judge secretly anointed him as the next and the first king, in fact. Then Samuel called all Israel together to reveal the king the Lord had chosen. They went through the tribes, probably by Urim and Thummim, until God's choice was picked. And today we will learn about the career of this new king. So we'd seen in 1 Samuel 10 and verse 20, and when Samuel had caused all the tribes of Israel to come near, the tribe of Benjamin was chosen. And when he had caused the tribe of Benjamin to come near by their families, the tribe of Matri was chosen, and Saul the son of Kish was chosen. But when they sought him, he could not be found. Therefore they inquired of the Lord further, "Has the man come here yet?" And the Lord answered, "There he is, hidden among the equipment." So Saul was so frightened of being proclaimed king that he was hiding himself among everybody's baggage. Verse 23, "So they ran and brought him from there, and when he stood among the people, he was taller than any of the people from his shoulders upward. And Samuel said to all the people, 'Do you see him whom the Lord has chosen, that there is no one like him among all the people?' And so all the people shouted and said, 'Long live the king!' So Saul is brought before the people of Israel, and they see his kingly appearance. And of course, this makes them eager to hail him as king. Verse 25, "Then Samuel explained to the people the behavior of royalty, and wrote it in a book, and laid it up before the Lord. And Samuel sent all the people away, every man to his house." So Samuel explained to the people, and of course to Saul, the behavior of royalty. And I believe this is a reference to Deuteronomy chapter 17 and verse 14, where the Lord had said hundreds of years before this through Moses, "When you come to the land which the Lord your God is giving you, and possess it and dwell in it, and say, 'I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me.'" Well, did the Lord know his people or what? He predicted hundreds of years before it happened exactly what Israel would do. Well, of course, he's God. Nothing surprises him. Verse 15, he says then, "You shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses. One from among your brethren you shall set as king over you. You may not set a foreigner over you who is not your brother." So it has to be one of the Israelites, he says. Verse 16, "But he shall not multiply horses for himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses. For the Lord has said to you, 'You shall not return that way again.' Neither shall he multiply wives for himself, lest his heart turn away. Nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself." So there are three commands. He's not supposed to multiply horses. He can have a horse, but he can't multiply them. He's not supposed to go to Egypt to get horses, because, of course, they'd come as slaves out of there, and the Lord says, don't return there to get horses. He's not to multiply wives. Now, understand, if you know math, to get to one wife, you can't multiply, because zero times anything is zero. You have to add to get to one. But anything above one is multiplication. So I think he's supposed to have one wife. And this was always a tendency of kings in that day to have a harem. And then he shouldn't greatly multiply silver and gold. He shouldn't greatly enrich himself, in other words. In verse 18, "Also it shall be, when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book, from the one before the priests, the Levites. And it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, and be careful to observe all the words of this law and these statutes, that his heart may not be lifted above his brethren, that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left, and that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, he and his children in the midst of Israel." So this was the command, and Samuel made sure Saul knew it. And if he did what the law said, And assuming Saul could read and write, he had Saul write it out for himself. So he couldn't make the excuse that he didn't know the command. So then Samuel sent everyone away back home, verse 26, and Saul also went home to Gibeah. And valiant men went with him, whose hearts God had touched. But some rebels said, "How can this man save us?" So they despised him and brought him no presents, but he held his peace. So Saul goes back home, not a very auspicious start to his kingship, and yet he doesn't go alone. God touched the hearts of certain men to go with Saul. Well, that's very interesting. God touched their hearts, their inner beings. Well, God can do that with some people who yield their hearts to him. But others scoffed at Saul as king. They said, "How can this guy save us? He's just a man." And what did they expect, Superman? But Saul keeps quiet. He doesn't say anything as yet. These scoffers don't bring him presents. It seems others bring him presents to congratulate him on being made king. These don't. But Saul still says nothing. Well, the big conflict with Ammon that the people had wanted a king for comes in 1 Samuel chapter 11. Then Nahash the Ammonite came up and encamped against Jabesh-Gilead. And all the men of Jabesh said to Nahash, "Make a covenant with us, and we will serve you." And Nahash the Ammonite answered them, "On this condition I will make a covenant with you, that I may put out all your right eyes and bring reproach on all Israel." Then the elders of Jabesh said to him, "Hold off for 7 days, that we may send messengers to all the territory of Israel. And then, if there is no one to save us, we will come out to you." So the messengers came to Gibeah of Saul and told the news in the hearing of the people. And all the people lifted up their voices and wept. Now there was Saul coming behind the herd from the field. And Saul said, "What troubles the people that they weep?" And they told him the words of the men of Jabesh. Then the Spirit of God came upon Saul when he heard this news, and his anger was greatly aroused. So he took a yoke of oxen and cut them in pieces, and sent them throughout all the territory of Israel by the hands of messengers, saying, "Whoever does not go out with Saul and Samuel to battle, so it shall be done to his oxen." Now this is interesting. Remember, this was the sign we had back in Judges, that this Levite, our heroic, quote-unquote, Levite, sent out pieces of his concubine to all Israel to get them together against Benjamin. Well, now Saul, the man of Benjamin, sends out this cut-up yoke of oxen, saying, "If you don't come to the assembly, this is going to happen to your oxen." Now notice that was a little bit more moderated than Israel's oath back then, that they would wipe out and destroy any city that didn't come. Saul is a little less insane than what was going on in that period. Well, the result is, "And the fear of the Lord fell on the people, and they came out with one consent. When he numbered them in Bezek, the children of Israel were 300,000, and the men of Judah 30,000. And they said to the messengers who came, 'Thus you shall say to the men of Jabesh-Gilead, tomorrow by the time the sun is hot, you shall have help.' Then the messengers came and reported it to the men of Jabesh, and they were glad. Therefore the men of Jabesh said, 'Tomorrow we will come out to you, and you may do with us whatever seems good to you.' So it was on the next day that Saul put the people in three companies, and they came into the midst of the camp in the morning watch, and killed the Ammonites until the heat of the day. And it happened that those who survived were scattered, so that no two of them were left together." So Saul gets the great victory over Ammon that the people wanted from a king. And yet notice what it said earlier in the passage. The Spirit of God came on him. How does Saul get the victory? By the Spirit of God. So who really saved Israel? Saul? No. It was the true king with a capital K. Jehovah, Yahweh himself, he was the one who saved the people, not the king they desired. He was always the one who could save them. He was always their real hope. He was always their real ruler. But they had rebelliously demanded a human king. Well, what could a human king do without God? Nothing. So God saved them like he had always done. It's just he used this king they demanded. Verse 12, "Then the people said to Samuel, 'Who is he who said, shall Saul reign over us? Bring the men that we may put them to death.' But Saul said, 'Not a man shall be put to death this day, for today the Lord has accomplished salvation in Israel.'" So the people, in their excitement and their enthusiasm over their new king, want revenge on the scoffers. They want to execute anybody who had scoffed at Saul being king before. But Saul nobly refuses their suggestion. He said, "No. Nobody will be put to death this day on the day that God has given us this great victory, this salvation in Israel. Verse 14, then Samuel said to the people, come, let us go to Gilgal and renew the kingdom there. So all the people went to Gilgal, and there they made Saul king before the Lord in Gilgal. There they made sacrifices of peace offerings before the Lord, and there Saul and all the men of Israel rejoiced greatly. So Samuel commands the people to gather to Gilgal and renew their oaths of loyalty to Saul. And so they all gather, and while they're there, they make sacrifices to the Lord. And Saul, along with the people, rejoice greatly at what God has done in Israel. But Israel needs to realize what they've done. They need to realize that they've chosen the human king and rejected the Lord. And so Samuel is going to deal with them about that in chapter 12. Verse 1, now Samuel said to all Israel, indeed, I have heeded your voice and all that you said to me, and have made a king over you. And now, here is the king, walking before you. And I am old and gray-headed. And look, my sons are with you. I have walked before you from my childhood to this day. Here I am. Witness against me before the Lord and before his anointed. Whose ox have I taken? Or whose donkey have I taken? Or whom have I cheated? Whom have I oppressed? And from whose hand have I received any bribe with which to blind my eyes? I will restore it to you. And they said, you have not cheated us or oppressed us, nor have you taken anything from any man's hand. Then he said to them, the Lord is witness against you, and his anointed is witness this day, that you have not found anything in my hand. And they answered, he is witness. So Samuel pleads with the people, you rejected me as your judge. You demanded a king. Well, what injustice had I done? Who had I cheated? Who had I robbed from? When had I taken a bribe to twist justice? Will the people testify before Jehovah and before Saul has anointed that Samuel had done nothing to make him unworthy of being judge? Verse 6, then Samuel said to the people, it is the Lord who raised up Moses and Aaron and who brought your fathers up from the land of Egypt. Now therefore, stand still that I may reason with you before the Lord concerning all the righteous acts of the Lord which he did to you and your fathers. When Jacob had gone into Egypt and your fathers cried out to the Lord, then the Lord sent Moses and Aaron, who brought your fathers out of Egypt and made them dwell in this place. And when they forgot the Lord their God, he sold them into the hand of Sisera, commander of the army of Hazor, into the hand of the Philistines, and into the hand of the king of Moab, and they fought against them. Then they cried out to the Lord and said, we have sinned, because we have forsaken the Lord and served the Baals and Ashtoreths. But now deliver us from the hand of our enemies, and we will serve you. And the Lord sent Jerubbaal, Bedan, Jephthah, and Samuel, and delivered you out of the hand of your enemies on every side, and you dwelt in safety. So Samuel reviews the history of Israel. He recounts how they were slaves in Egypt, and Yahweh rescued them. He recounts how they forgot Yahweh and served the idols, the Baals, and the Ashtoreths. And then Yahweh gave them into the hand of their enemies. But when they admitted their sin, he sent the judges to deliver them. Now, the one odd name there, we recognize Jerubbaal, that was Gideon, Jephthah, and Samuel. But who was Bedan? Well, Bedan was probably Barak. It's a version of his name. Well, he goes on, verse 12, and when you saw that Nahash, king of the Ammonites, came against you, you said to me, no, but a king shall reign over us, when the Lord your God was your king. So after all this, after time and time again, the Lord had delivered them from their enemies, who had only been oppressing them because they turned against the Lord in the first place, so he allowed it. After all these deliverances, when they felt threatened by Nahash the Ammonite, they forgot all their history. They forgot the Lord's long faithfulness to them, and their long unfaithfulness to him. And they matched their fathers in unfaithfulness by demanding a human king to save them rather than the Lord. Well, what a terrible insult to the one who had graciously rescued them over and over and over again. Verse 13, now therefore, here is the king whom you have chosen and whom you have desired. And take note, the Lord has set a king over you. If you fear the Lord and serve him and obey his voice and do not rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then both you and the king who reigns over you will continue following the Lord your God. However, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord, but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, Then the hand of the Lord will be against you, as it was against your fathers. So he warns them. He says, here is the king you asked for. Jehovah gave you the king you asked for. Now if you will serve and obey Jehovah, you and your king, well then he will preserve you. That was always the case throughout their judges period. But if they rebel, they and their king, if they rebel against the Lord, well then he will be against them. In other words, things will be just like they had been all through the time of the judges. Having a king will make no difference. If they serve the Lord, they and their king will prosper. If they don't serve the Lord, he'll sell them and their king into the hands of their enemies. If they turn back to the Lord, he'll deliver them. And the fact that there is now a human king over Israel will not change anything. Things will go the same. The Lord will treat them the same way. So what did they gain by demanding a king? Nothing other than a man to enslave and oppress them, if he feels like it. That's all they gained out of it. Verse 16. Now therefore, stand and see this great thing which the Lord will do before your eyes. Is today not the wheat harvest? I will call to the Lord, and he will send thunder and rain, that you may perceive and see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord, in asking a king for yourselves. So Samuel called to the Lord, and the Lord sent thunder and rain that day. And all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. Now to understand this, we have to understand that it was unheard of to have rain during wheat harvest. I mean, in Israel, that was a time of year where it just did not rain. And so to show them how wicked they had been by asking for a human king and rejecting Yahweh as their king, well, Yahweh will send a thunderstorm right during this time where there shouldn't be any rain. And Samuel prayed to the Lord, and he did it. He sent this thunderstorm to show, I guess, the thundering anger of the Lord against what they had done in rejecting him. So all the people were afraid. They greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. They respected him, in other words. Reverenced him, were in awe of him, and I suppose were slightly afraid when they realized what they had done in rejecting him. Verse 19, and all the people said to Samuel, pray for your servants to the Lord your God, that we may not die. For we have added to all our sins the evil of asking a king for ourselves. So they finally get it. They finally realize their sin. And they realize that they deserve to die for rejecting the Lord. So they ask Samuel to pray for them that they won't die. Verse 20, then Samuel said to the people, do not fear. You have done all this wickedness. Yet do not turn aside from following the Lord, but serve the Lord with all your heart. And do not turn aside. For then you would go after empty things which cannot profit or deliver, for they are nothing. In other words, that's idols. Nothing. A statue that's supposed to represent a god, and yet the god doesn't exist. Just an empty nothing. Can't save. Verse 22, for the Lord will not forsake his people, for his great name's sake, because it has pleased the Lord to make you his people. Moreover, as for me, far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you, but I will teach you the good and the right way. Only fear the Lord, and serve him in truth with all your heart, for consider what great things he has done for you. But if you still do wickedly, you shall be swept away, both you and your king. So Samuel promises that they will not die if they serve the Lord. And Samuel promises he will not be so sinful as to stop praying for them, the Lord's people. But they must fear the Lord. Having a king won't rescue them if they don't fear the Lord. They will be swept away along with their king if they don't fear the Lord. So he leaves them with this. Yes, you've sinned, and the Lord will forgive you, but you need to serve him. You need to serve him. 1 Samuel 13 and verse 1. Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel. But this is simply a rewriting of the passage, which in the Hebrew reads, Saul was 1 year old when he became king, and he reigned 2 years over Israel. Now I suppose it's since we know very well that Saul was not 1 year old when he became king. He was always already a grown man with children. And since we know that he reigned about 40 years, not 2 years, that's why people have rewritten this passage. Try to make it say, Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, which doesn't make any sense. But see, I think when it refers to Saul being 1 year old when he became king, it wasn't talking about just Saul. It was talking about the new Saul. Well, what do I mean, the new Saul? Well, remember 1 Samuel 10 and verse 6? Then the Spirit of the Lord will come upon you, and you will prophesy with them and be turned into another man. That's what Samuel told Saul would happen to him. He would be turned into another man. And then 1 Samuel 10 and verse 9, so it was when he had turned his back to go from Samuel that God gave him another heart. And all those signs came to pass that day. So through God's power, Saul became a new person, a new man with a new heart. And see, I think it was that new man, the new Saul, who was 1 year old when he became king. And sadly, it was the new Saul who only lived 2 years as king before he died. And the old Saul came back to the fore and reigned the rest of the 38 years of Saul's kingship. And the new Saul, sadly, never reappeared. So yes, it was the new Saul who was 1 year old when he became king. It was the new Saul who only reigned 2 years over Israel. And then God left him, and the old Saul was all that was left. Verse 2, Saul chose for himself 3,000 men of Israel. 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash, and in the mountains of Beth-El, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. The rest of the people he sent away, every man to his tent. And Jonathan attacked the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it. Then Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. Now all Israel heard it said that Saul had attacked the garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel had also become an abomination to the Philistines. And the people were called together to Saul at Gilgal. So Saul has dealt with Ammon, but now the Philistines need to be dealt with. Samuel conquered them, and they had been leery of Israel as long as Samuel was the ruler. But now Saul knew he had to establish dominance over the Philistines if he was ever going to be king. And it seems his son Jonathan starts it by attacking their garrison. Verse 5, then the Philistines gathered together to fight with Israel. 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and encamped in Michmash to the east of Beth-Avon. When the men of Israel saw that they were in danger, for the people were distressed, then the people hid in caves, in thickets, in rocks, in holes, and in pits. And some of the Hebrews crossed over the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was still in Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. Then he waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. Now this is interesting, Saul waiting 7 days for Samuel in Gilgal. Do you remember what we read back in 1 Samuel 10, last time, in verse 8? When Samuel told Saul exactly what was going to happen to him in the hours ahead, and then he gave him an instruction. He said, you shall go down before me to Gilgal, and surely I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and make sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days you shall wait, till I come to you and show you what you should do. So when setting Saul up as king, Samuel told him, there's going to come a time where you go to Gilgal, and you're going to have to wait for me 7 days until I come to offer sacrifices. And then I will tell you what the Lord wants you to do. So in setting him up as king, this was the great test Samuel gave Saul, the orders he had given him, the orders which only he knew about, which were to determine if he was going to be a king worthy of the kingship. And so now the time has come. But what a time. Saul's army is terrified of the Philistines. They're abandoning him one by one. The 7 day wait is wearing away their morale. And Samuel keeps not coming and not coming. And oh, what a test of Saul's faith. Would he pass? Would he be a man of faith? We'll find out in our next study. So Samuel was the last and the greatest judge, and yet the people did not trust the Lord's protection through him and demanded a human king. God chose a king from the unlikely tribe of Benjamin, the striking Saul. Samuel revealed this choice, but many were at first skeptical. But when Saul won the victory over Ammon they desired, they were all for him. Samuel revealed to them how wicked their actions had been, and the people finally got it. Saul had important instructions from Samuel to obey. And now the time has come. Will he obey? Will he prove himself a man of faith? Well, may we in our circumstances, in our dangers, in the difficult and sometimes frightening circumstances of life we might face, let us wait on the Lord, like Samuel had commanded Saul to do.
So we see that God, having granted Israel a king, has changed nothing. Whether a judge or a king, the Lord still demands that both the people of Israel and their king must follow and obey their true king, Jehovah. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on the first king. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the judges with Samuel and Saul. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you study God's Word more, you know and love God more. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We also offer a weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on his mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.